Well, one of my favorite football coaches was asked a question one time after a game. He was asked, how is it that your players, when the lights are on and when the pressure is there and when it's that exact right moment, how is it that your players seem to always rise to the occasion? And this was his response. He says, none of us rise to the occasion. We all sink to our level of training. And this is what he meant. When you get out there and the pressure's on and it's time to make the play, it's time to do what you're supposed to do in that moment. We don't all of a sudden just get better and magically we can do amazing things that we could never do before. Instead, what happens when we get out there, naturally all of us, we sink to the level of our training. We sink to the level of how hard we've practiced, of what we've been taught, of what we've allowed ourselves to take into our minds, into our hearts. And it's an amazing statement because it's true, not just in football, it's true in life, that we don't rise to the occasion. We don't all of a sudden come out and all of a sudden we do all these great things in that moment. We sink to our level of training. We go back to that place of whatever we've been fed into our minds and our hearts, whatever we practice, whatever becomes natural for us. When the time comes to live that out, when the time comes to make decisions about who we're going to be and how we're going to act, we all sink back to our training, to what we've allowed to come into our lives. Charles Spurgeon was a famous preacher, and from a Christian perspective, he said something that has a similar sentiment. But he said, every Christian is either a missionary or an imposter. That is, for those of us who are followers of Jesus, we are either missionaries, that is, set out on mission. We have things to do, and we are trained to get out and to follow Jesus, or we're imposters. In other words, when we come together and we do something like this, all of our preaching on Jesus, all of our worship and the songs that we sing, all of our discussions that we might have in a life group or something like that, all of our love that we receive from God, and we've sung already about that this morning, and hopefully you've noticed that in the path of our scripture readings and the words of the song. We've talked so much, saying so much about the love of God, the love that God has for us, and how nothing can separate us from that, and how amazing it is. None of that is supposed to stay here, confined by these walls in a church building where it's safe. None of that is supposed to just stay here. That love that we take in, the grace that we receive, is supposed to be directed outward into the world where we go and make an impact on the world around us. And it is really easy for us to have what we call orthodox theology, or in other words, to believe the right things and to think we're right about believing the right things about God and to not actually follow Jesus. But when we look at the life, the teachings, even the death and resurrection of Jesus, then we see that he goes to the people who need to be loved the most, the people who are on the outskirts, the people who are marginalized, the people who are needy. And he went out and he met those needs. He loved those people. He served the world. And if we're to be followers of Jesus, that's the training that we need. And the question I want to ask today, we've been in this Follow Me series and we've been talking about what it practically looks like to follow Jesus. The question I want us to wrestle with today is, will we follow Jesus there? We've talked about loving God and what it means to come together and to worship him. And we hope that, you know, as we talked about that, that when we come together and we sing these amazing songs and we catch a glimpse of what God is like, that we would go out, not just worship on Sunday morning, but that we would go out and our lives would be completely changed, that in everything we do, we would point upwards to God and how much he loves us, that whether we're mowing the lawn or shoveling snow or whether we're at work or with our family, talking to our friends, that the love of God might so capture our hearts and minds that everything we do might be directed in worship to him. And we talked last week about what it looks like to love one another the way that Christ has loved us, with that powerful, sacrificial kind of love, the love that says, I'll put somebody else before myself. That we wanted to build a community of people around here that would come together and be so intimate with one another and love each other so deeply that people on the outside, people looking at us would say, what are these people all about? You're different. and that we might be able to say, it's because we follow Jesus. And today we want to talk about the fact that all of that, all of what we get, was never intended to stay in a safe place amongst just us. But instead, Jesus challenges us to turn that outwards and to serve the world with the kind of love that he has loved us. He has challenged us to step up, and as like we sung just a few minutes ago, to be a generation of people that would stand up in faith and change the world, do something different, bring his kingdom to this earth. And so we're going to be in John chapter 21. If you've got a Bible with you, love for you to take it out and to read along with us. If you don't, the words will be on the screen behind me, and we would love for you to work through this. I hope that some of what we talk about here, you'll be able to go home and open up the scriptures to read them and to investigate them for yourselves. And we've now started up our life groups, and so want you to know you've got your sermon notes that you got on the way in, so you can track with us this morning. And then on the back of those sermon notes are a number of questions that we're going to run through in our life groups that we want you to take this and to be able to go deeper with it, think about it, and talk about it in community and how this might impact your life and change your life. And so please review those before you get to a life group. And we're just excited for what God's going to do through those groups and as we study Scripture together and love each other in a deep way, what God's going to do. Here's John chapter 21, I'll start in verse 1. It says, "After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and he revealed himself in this way." When it says after this, what it's talking about is Jesus has been crucified, Jesus has been risen, and he has appeared to his disciples already a couple of times, that they have actually seen the risen Jesus in the body, not like a ghost, but they have seen Jesus in his risen body with all of his wounds, and he's spoken to them. They've experienced that, and now we are in the aftermath of that in a time where the disciples are trying to figure out what it is they're supposed to do in light of what's just happened. They've just been following Jesus for 3 years, and they've been learning from his teaching. They've been walking with him. They've experienced all kinds of crazy things. And then their whole world kind of exploded as Jesus was arrested and crucified. And then in the midst of that kind of confusion, in the midst of that kind of despair, they see the risen Jesus. And we're at this point now where they've seen the risen Jesus, and they're trying to figure out, what do we do with this? Now that Jesus has been resurrected, what does that mean for our lives? Where do we go from here? Verse 2 says, "Simon Peter, Thomas called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee," that's James and John, "and two others of his disciples were together." So there's seven disciples who are here all together. "Simon Peter said to them, 'I am going fishing.' And they said to him, 'We will go with you.' They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing." Here's what's going on. In the midst of all this confusion, in the midst of trying to figure out how do we live now in light of the fact that Jesus was not only crucified, but is resurrected, the disciples are looking around and saying, you know, what do we do? Simon Peter, he's a fisherman. When Jesus called him, that's what he was doing. That's who he was. And so in this moment of trying to figure out what to do, he goes back to what he's comfortable with. He goes back to what he knows. He goes back, he sinks to his training. "I'm a fisherman. I'm going to go fishing." And the others say, "Yeah, well, we'll go with you too." They sink to their level of training. They go back to what they know and how they know to do it. And scholars debate this a bit back and forth on whether this is a big deal or not a big deal. Some say, you know, the disciples, they need to eat, so of course they're going to go fishing and find something. Other scholars have said that this is a really big deal, almost an act of defiance, that now that Jesus, you know, this has happened, they're so confused and they're throwing their hands up and saying, "I can't do this anymore, I'm just going to go back to fishing." And we don't know for sure which one it is, but it's probably somewhere in the middle, this idea of in the midst of the confusion and not knowing what to do, they sink back to, "I'm going to go fishing. This is what I know. This is what I've been taught and trained to do. I know how to do fishing. I'm comfortable here." And we find out that they catch nothing. They're there all night. They are trained. They know the best times for fishing. They know the best places. They know where to go, and they know how to fish. And in the book of John, we often find phrases like in the night, and they're symbolic, they're layered. And so on the one layer, yeah, it was nighttime, and so he says it was at night. But in the book of John, it's also often a symbol In the night is this confusing time, or a time where things aren't seen properly, where you're not sure where to go. And so we have this in the background that they're being ineffective. They've gone back to what's comfortable, but they still can't catch any fish, and it's in the night. They're in the dark. Jesus' disciples were scared, they were confused, and they were directionless. And I wonder this morning if some of us are in the same boat. That's a pun, because they were in a boat. Yeah, thanks. Okay, a little slow. So was the first service, that's fine. But are we in the same boat? I mean, as followers of Jesus, a lot of us, we're going through life, and at different stages, we sort of throw our arms up. And the language that we often use, and I get this question so much, and so we tend to talk about it a lot here, is, well, I don't even know, what's God's will for my life? What's my purpose? I'm directionless. Do I go to grad school? What kind of job do I get? What's happening in my family? How do I get through this crisis? God, what's your will for my life? What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to be? And we sometimes feel like we're in the dark. And you know what happens? We often sink back to our training. And if we're not careful, our training can be whatever our culture says to us, sometimes whatever our parents have implanted into our minds or our friends or what the people around us are doing. And so our lives start to be structured around some of these expectations that we have. We sink back into our training, what's comfortable for us. For many, we got to go to university. I got to go to college. I got to get that education so that I can get that job, so I can make that kind of money. So at this time in my life, I'll be able to buy a home so that I can get married at this time. And this is what my family should look like. And this is how my finances should look like. And we start to order our whole lives around those things that have been programmed into us by culture, sometimes by well-meaning family members or friends. This is what your life should look like. And we get trained into thinking, this is how my life should be. Safety and security and comfort and a certain lifestyle. It's comfortable. We ease back into it. This morning, what I want to talk about is the way that through Jesus, God transforms our work. And when I say work, what I mean is what we spend most of our time during the week doing. For some of us, that's going to school. It's our education at this point in our life. For others of us, we're in the job market. We're out there in the business world doing our thing. For some of us, it's our family, and we're spending time taking care of our family or raising a family. And whatever it is, what I want to talk about is how Jesus in this moment is going to transform the work of these disciples, what they do and who they are. And get them on mission for what he's doing. And the first thing I want to tell you, if you're taking notes, this is the first one. How does God transform the work that we're doing? The first thing is he gives us purpose. He gives us purpose. He gives us direction. This is what was so lacking in the disciples in this moment. What are we going to do now? How do we process this? What is the resurrection of the man Jesus mean in our lives? How is that going to change each and every day? What is God's will for my life? And what this passage is about, as we'll see in a few minutes, is Jesus giving them a mission, giving them a purpose. Sometimes we think that we are primarily a student. We're primarily whatever our occupation is. We're primarily a mother or a father or a son or a daughter. That our identity comes from so many things in the world. And one of the things that Jesus is going to do here is going to show them their purpose is different. And what I want to share with you this morning is that those who follow Jesus, that becomes the primary identity of who we are. That we're not doctors or nurses or students or parents who happen to be Christian and try and work that into our lives somewhere. Instead, we're Christians, we're followers of Jesus as we parent, as we go to work, as we go to school, in everything that we do. This becomes our purpose. It becomes our reason for living. It's being invited into a story that's so much bigger than our own. Something so much greater. So the first thing is Jesus transforms our work. He gives us purpose. Secondly, he gives us the strength. Verse 4, back in John 21. It says, just as day was breaking, here's the disciples who had gone back to fishing. It was nighttime. They hadn't caught anything. They're tired. They're frustrated. Jesus stood on shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Probably Probably just because it was still dark or there wasn't enough light. Maybe because they weren't close enough to see who Jesus was at this point. And Jesus said to them, "Children, do you have any fish?" They answered him, "No." He said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." This is kind of like when you go on a fishing trip, you know, and you pass by another fisherman and say, "Hey, what have you caught?" "Oh, nothing. It's been a bad night." And you see this experienced fisherman who says, "I know the spots. Cast over there. You know, right over there by the weeds or under the logs. That's where you'll find the fish." That's kind of what's going on here. And so the disciples, they haven't even recognized that it's Jesus yet. And it's just kind of fisherman talk. And he says, "Hey, throw your nets on the other side of the boat and you'll find some there." So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. The disciple whom Jesus loved, therefore, said to Peter, "It is the Lord." When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from land, but about 100 yards off. Now listen, we've been in the book of John for a few weeks, and we've seen a number of his signs, a number of these powerful things that Jesus does. Sometimes we just refer to them as miracles, but one of the things we've been talking about through this series is that Jesus isn't just doing arbitrary miracles to say, "Hey, I'm powerful." And so why does he do this? Why does he give them this amazing catch of fish? If all he wanted to do was show that he was powerful, think about it. He has just been crucified, died, buried, and then rose again to life in the body. What more would he need to do if all he was doing was showing that he was powerful? I mean, what more powerful thing can you do than to rise from the dead? And so Jesus, what he's doing is he's performing a sign that once again is going to point us towards a greater reality, not just that he's done this sign, but that the sign, just like all signs, point to something greater, point to a greater reality. So we have here the disciples. They don't recognize him. All of a sudden, they catch all of these fish. You have Peter, probably John, the beloved disciple. We're not for sure on that, but we think probably John, who wrote this gospel, and he's, "It's Jesus, it's the Lord." And so Peter, he is always the impetuous one. He's not the guy that kind of sits back and, you know, "Wow, Jesus is on the shore. I wonder what we should do and how we should respond to this." No, he's naked. He's fishing, probably just with kind of an undergarment on. He grabs that undergarment and he jumps overboard and swims for it. "Jesus, it's Jesus, it's Jesus, let's go." And he leaves behind his buddies with all the fish, and it says there were so many fish they had to drag it. They couldn't even pull it into the boat at first. And so he's just all out for Jesus. And finally they come and they go to the shore. Why has Jesus done this? Why does he perform this sign? It's because it points to a prophecy that's really important in the life of the Jews of this time. It goes back to a passage in Ezekiel chapter 47. You don't need to turn there now. I'll put a couple of verses on behind me. But in Ezekiel 47, Ezekiel, the prophet, is having this spiritual vision. He's being taken up into this spiritual vision. He's being walked around to show these spiritual realities. And one of the things that he sees in chapter 47 is this great temple. For the Jews, the temple is the spot where God's presence is, and where they would all come to worship, and where they would invite people from anywhere. This is where we worship. We all go to one central place. That's where God's presence is. That's where we find him. That's where we experience him. That's where we receive the blessings of God. And so he's shown this temple, and he notices that from the temple, all of a sudden, water is starting to come out on each side of the temple. And he's guided around. He sees as the water trickles, that as they walk down further, all of a sudden it gets deeper and deeper until it gets about knee deep. And then they go a little further down and it starts to become a river that goes about waist deep. And then eventually they keep going further down this river to the point where he says this river got so deep that you'd have to swim through it. You couldn't stand in it anymore. And what he's seeing is this fresh water that is flowing and changing any salt water into fresh water. And there's these images of fish and trees and all kinds of vegetation growing up in this wonderful, beautiful, vibrant, life-giving water. And it all flows from the temple. It all flows from where God's presence is. Symbolically saying, God is lavishing real life upon people. And one of the points that we find in Ezekiel is that it's a prophecy of a time that is going to come when God is going to unleash his spirit, this living water that is going to bring life to everything that it touches. Listen to this from Ezekiel 47, verse 9. And wherever the river goes, every living creature that swarms will live, and there will be very many fish. For this water goes there, that the waters of the sea may become fresh. So everything will live where the river goes. Fishermen will stand beside the sea, from En Gedi to En Eglaim. It will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be very many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. We have this picture of this life-giving river, where there will be fish of all kinds. It's symbolic of people of all kinds. With this life-giving water, the Spirit of God flowing from himself, his presence, in the temple. Ezekiel means God strengthens. That's what Ezekiel, his name, means. It's what the prophet Ezekiel, the book, it means God strengthens. The message in Ezekiel is that a time of great and powerful redemption is coming. That's the promise. A time will come when God will unleash his spirit, where he will send his Messiah to come, and it will change everything. He will give you life. He will give you water that you might grow, and there will be fish, so many fish of all different kinds, such that fishermen, this would be the place to throw your net in, and you'll know you'll catch something, because this is the place to live. And this is where we find our strength, in the powerful redemptive activity of God working in history. It's a vision of a new era of hope and redemption, of life and wholeness. It's living water bringing life and newness of God's Spirit for all people. It's this wonderful, beautiful picture of what Ezekiel said, strengthened by God. This is what's going to happen one day. This is what we look forward to. And so when Jesus sees these fishermen and tells them to throw the net, and we see all of this, these fish being caught, so many fish, all of a sudden these images are flashing in their head. And what Jesus is saying is, the time is now. You're strengthened. The water is poured out of the temple through Jesus Christ. The presence of God by his Spirit poured out into humanity, into the world. Now is the time. It's happening. Be strengthened. He's about to commission them, to give them the purpose of their lives, and to say, the time is now when you'll be strengthened by God's Holy Spirit to be givers of life, true, deep, whole, spiritual life. You're not just going to be fishermen anymore. God's taking it to another level and saying, I'm going to strengthen you. I'll give you the strength to do this. All flowing out from the presence of God. But now in Jesus, he's become the temple, risen, the presence of God, sending out that beautiful life-giving water, his very own Spirit. Which brings us to the third thing. Jesus is transforming our work by giving us vocation. Verse 9 says, when they got out on land, they saw charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish that you have just caught. So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore. Now, I don't know how in a couple of verses ago, the other disciples couldn't even haul that net on board. They had to drag it. Now Peter goes out, and maybe the adrenaline's flowing. Maybe he's a big, strong guy, but he grabs all those fish and he starts hauling them in. The net was full of large fish, 153 of them, and although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, come and have breakfast. Now none of the disciples dared ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus revealed to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. It says there were so many fish. Again, it reminds us of that story in Ezekiel of this will be the place where people will cast out the nets and fish will be caught. And here John records that there are 153 large fish. We don't know exactly why he says 153. It could be that somebody just thought, that is a lot of fish. Let's count them and put them in there. But the earliest interpretations in the early church of why this was there is for this reason, because one of the naturalists of the time, kind of the scientists of the time who studied fish back in the first century, had concluded the way of thinking at that time was that there were 153 different kinds of species of fish. And so when John puts this in, what he's saying is, we caught everything. We caught every kind of fish that you could imagine. that when we link this up with what the prophet Ezekiel was saying and what Jesus is teaching, that he's saying the gospel net is sufficient. The message of God's love and sacrifice, the message of Jesus Christ dying on the cross and bringing people to himself is sufficient to catch every kind of fish, every kind of person, and it will not tear. The message is strong. The message is reliable. The message is for everybody. Now is the time that God's grace is being unleashed into this world. And it doesn't matter where you come from or who you are, what nationality, what religion you've been born into, what kind of problems that you have. This gospel net is strong. This message is so powerful. And it is for everybody. Every kind. Every nation. Every tribe. Every tongue. This is the mission. That this message would go out. And this is the third way that Jesus is transforming their work. He's giving them vocation. This is not going to be something that just a few people will do who are on staff at churches. This is not just for professionals. This is for everybody to engage in the life-changing message of Jesus Christ for everybody. He is inviting them into a story that's so much bigger than just their own as individuals. Now is the time. Jesus is saying, I am with you. The time is now. We are living in the era of grace, and all people will be affected. And he's saying to his followers, you will be effective. You can be effective. You can change this world. You can reach people because of the living water that's inside of you, God's Spirit living inside of you. You can do it by God's grace and through the power of his Spirit. What Jesus has just done was not just some miracle, some show of power. It was a sign of a new era and a commissioning. Saying, you're on mission now. This is becoming your identity. Right from the get-go, the church is sent on mission by Jesus. And it's not that the church has a mission, but rather that the mission has a church. God has a mission of bringing his kingdom to this world, his love, his grace, his forgiveness. He has a mission of bringing to the marginalized, to the poor, what they need. He has a mission of bringing healing to those who are hurting. He has a mission of bringing wholeness to relational life. He has a mission of restoring all things. And he has given the mission, the church, to allow us to be part of something so much bigger, to join him on his mission. And I wonder how often in our lives we're asking God to join us on our mission. We're sinking to our training that culture has given us, that, God, I want some stuff, and I want a certain lifestyle. I want comfort. I want safety and security. I want to be able to sit back and just enjoy life and coast through. And that sometimes is what our prayer life looks like. And yet here we have such a different purpose, such a different strength and vocation, where Jesus is saying, the time is now. Come change the world with me. Follow me. I'm going to the marginalized. I'm going to the hurting. I'm going to the war-torn. I'm going to the poor. Will you come with me? Will you be part of the world-changing mission that I'm on? And that's the question that we have as followers of Jesus. It's easy to have orthodox beliefs or to think that we believe all the right things. The question is, will we follow Jesus there? Will we follow Jesus into the world to make a difference in his power and with his strength? To say, this is who I am. I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm going to go serve the world. What would it be like if we did that? Let me talk for just a couple of minutes about application. Here at Westside, we've gone through over the last few weeks what we think is the most important things that we can do. We started this morning even talking about loving God, loving others. Today we talk about serving the world, getting on mission with God. And we want to create environments where we make it easy for you to do this. And what I want you to do is to make serving the world around you a consistent part of your life. Here's how. Number one, if you haven't already, and many of us have, but if you haven't already, we want you to join one of our teams here, one of our service teams. Out at the Connect Center in the lobby today, there's little booklets that look like this that say next steps on them. And if you're not part of a team, there's a section in here that talks about joining a team, and it's got a list of all the service teams that we have here. And if you're not part of one, we would love for you to join one, to get involved, to be in a place where we can help, you can help serve someone who's not you. and with the goal that you would say, I'm going to make this a consistent part of what I do. We have our life groups, and we're so thrilled with how many of you have signed up over the last few weeks. And we're going to be starting this semester to give you opportunities through your life group to go with a group of people. We're going to connect you with partners that we have throughout the city, different organizations that are reaching the poor, the marginalized, the outcast, those who don't have enough. And we're going to give you in that group setting a chance to go and connect and try out volunteering for some of these ministries or organizations for just one day or one night and to experience what it is. And our hope is this, that you wouldn't just go down there with your group once and say, well, that was great. We did our part. Now we can feel good about ourselves and pat ourselves on the back. But that you might go check some of these places out and decide, I want to make this a consistent part of my life. Serving others, serving people who are in need, showing the love of Christ to the world around us. And we are hoping that you'll take up that opportunity. And this will become something that happens in the regular rhythm of your life. As I read through this passage and I was thinking about this fishing trip in this story, and I couldn't help but think as Jesus is standing there and he's commissioning them, he's telling them the time is now for you to go be effective, that when he had called them, one of the things that he had said to those disciples who were fishermen, he said, I'm going to make you fishers of men. I'm going to take you, who you are, fishermen, and what you do, and I'm going to elevate it. I'm going to make it something different. You're just not going to fish for fish anymore. You're going to be fishing for men. You're going to reach souls. You're going to reach people. You're going to change people's lives. He elevates that. And I wonder what it is for us. All of us who have our own personalities, our own strengths, our own gifts, our own talents, our own skills. How is it that God is or will be working in us to take who we are and to elevate us? To elevate what we do so that we are effective. And so Jesus said he would make them fishers of men. I have a couple of blanks on the bottom of your sermon notes that I want you maybe today or this week to prayerfully consider what you'll fill in. How is it that God is calling you to use whoever you are and whatever skills and abilities you have to serve the world around you? And so I've put there, I will be a blank of blank. For the disciples, it will be, I will be a fisher of men. The way that I fish and the effectiveness I have in fishing, I am now going to have with people. What will it be for you? It means we're not just doctors or nurses or engineers or caretakers or researchers or students or teachers or parents who happen to be Christians, but instead we become people for whom the gospel shapes everything that we are and therefore everything that we do. What has God called you to do? Who's he called you to be? In your situation in life, would you fill in those two blanks? Here's some examples. Disciples, fisher of men. Contractors of the kingdom. Doctors of souls. Engineers of relational community. Nurses of spirituality. Caretakers of people's lives. Providers of forgiveness. Delivery people of grace. Whoever you are and whatever skill that you have, will you take that and use it to serve the world around you? And if you really want to warm my heart this week, would you do this for me? Fill in those blanks. Come up with something that is you. Send me an email. Just tell me what you filled in. Tweet at me something. I want to know what, as a congregation, as a people, we come up with. Who are we? Who's God calling us to be? Where is he calling us to minister? How is he going to use your abilities, your personality, to work in the world around? Come up with something and let me know what it is. And I would love to just read some of those and get excited about how God is working in our community. And then post it somewhere. Stick it on a bulletin board or on the fridge or on your desk. And remind yourself that you're not just your occupation. You're not just whoever you are in your family. You're not just anything. You've been elevated. You're a follower of Jesus, called to be effective in this world, wherever you go. There was a prominent preacher who spent a night in the White House during the presidency of Bill Clinton. And the day after, Mother Teresa was scheduled to come and address the president, and I think it was Congress. So President Clinton asked the preacher, he said, well, what do you think Mother Teresa's going to say tomorrow? The preacher looked at him and he said, well, listen, if you expect that Mother Teresa's going to come here to stroke your ego, tell you you're doing a great job, you've got another thing coming. I'll tell you what Mother Teresa's going to tell you when she comes here tomorrow. She's going to get on you. She's going to get on you about your administration and how you're serving the poor, the more marginalized, the orphans and the widows. She's going to go after you about how you take care of the people who don't have enough. I'll tell you that. She's going to go after you about your stance on abortion, and she's going to go after you about being pro-life. She's going to want you to be pro-life. You just wait. She's not going to stroke your ego. President Clinton looked back, and he said, well, I get it, but a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, I was with the Pope, and you know, he said all those things to me and told me how I should do this different and that different, and he got to me on all those issues, and you know, to be honest, it didn't affect me that much. We're staying the course. We're going to go in the same direction. Preacher looked back at him and said, just know, tomorrow's going to be different. Well, the next day, Mother Teresa came. She gave a speech about the poor, the marginalized, the orphan, the widow, and how in America that administration should go about meeting the needs of these people. When she got to the end of her speech in front of all these powerful dignitaries, important people, politicians, she started pleading with them and begged with them. She says, when it comes to your unborn children, if you don't want them, if you don't want your children, give them to me. Give them to me. If you don't want your children, give them to me. I will raise them. I will feed them. I'll take care of them. Don't kill them. Please give them to me. And with that, she closed. And the whole room stood up and everybody applauded. The president turned to his preacher friend that he talked to the night before with tears streaming down his face. And he said, you were right. This is different. Friends, what was the difference? The Pope had the position. He had the power. He had the authority. He told the president what he thought that he should do. But Mother Teresa spoke with love. She was saying, not this is what you need to do, but I will be the mother to the motherless. Let me serve these children. Let me serve these families. And that's the question before us. We sang this morning about a generation rising up in faith. Will we be a generation that rises up in faith, that says not just we believe certain things, but that we live a certain way? We will be the mothers to the motherless. We will be the shelter for the homeless. We will bring the food and be the providers for the hungry. We will be people who follow Jesus to the marginalized, to the world that needs us. Because that's our mission that we've been set upon.